Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. School systems across the state are still reeling from the deep budget cuts made last summer by the General Assembly, and educators are calling on lawmakers to restore those reductions in the budget plan they are putting together this year. Wake County commissioners approved a budget that gives Wake County schools only half of the increase in funding requested by School Superintendent Tony Tata. Tata joins us now on News and Views to talk about the budget and his controversial student assignment plan. Well, Superintendent Tata, thank you very much for being with us. I know you're busy and we appreciate your time.
Sure thing. It's great to be here, Chris.
I guess we should jump in with what's been in the news lately, which is the budget of the Wake County schools. The county commissioners voted to spend some more money on schools, but not as much as you had requested. Where are we, do you think, with this
vote? Well, we submitted a solid budget proposal that asked for $8.8 million more than last year we got from the county, and the county has proffered a 3.9 increase, and based on 3 years of flat, no increase from the county, this is a step in the right direction, a positive sign. And it's also a positive sign in general for the economy of the area. So I think those are two good signs. And we're still talking to state legislators, and this is part of the budget process. We submit our proposal, and then the county submits its proposal, and the state has a say in the matter as well as far as state funding goes. And so at the end of the day, what we need in Wake County is $8.8 million, whether it's all from the county, all from the state, or a mix of the two.
Why is it needed this year? There have been some lean years in the past, but there are still folks on various places that still think schools have too much money or that have too much central office and that still have places they can cut.
Well, Chris, when I got here about 17 months ago, we were facing a $50 to $60 million hole in the budget, and we got there. We cut central office. We cut clerical positions in schools. We cut teacher assistant hours. We cut assistant principal months of employment. We cut programs. We found our way to a balanced budget that was significantly less than the prior year. This year is the same thing. This year's budget is $25 million less than last year's budget. And so when you put the 2 years together, that's about $75 million decrease. And yet we're growing 3,000 to 4,000 students a year. So it's a little counterintuitive to think that we have too much money. And I know that we need to be prudent with taxpayer dollars. And so that's why we have been cutting so much and why we are looking to be as lean as possible. And we had an independent organizational audit done about a year ago that said we are one of the leanest districts in the country of our size. So when you look at the value for the taxpayer dollar, we're a pretty good value for Wake County citizens.
Two things that the General Assembly is wrestling with that a lot of folks are talking about. One is the discretionary cut where they give a system money and then say, right, oh, by the way, give us some of that back. Right. And the other one is the loss of federal EduJobs money that most systems are using to keep teachers in the classroom. Right. Where does Wake County stand in both of those areas?
Well, we're losing $28 million in federal EduJobs funding, and that just is a natural expiration. It's nothing that we did. It's all systems across the country. This money is no longer being replenished by the federal government. So we have to face that. And so how we are dealing with that, how we determined a year ago to begin dealing with it, is to save money. And part of the cuts were to build up our savings for this year. And so we saved approximately $33 million in addition to the cuts that we made, and so that we could push that $28 million onto the table to preserve all the teacher jobs that we have to have to keep our student-teacher ratios reasonable, and so that we are providing that sound education that Wake County citizens expect. So on the EduJobs front, we are offsetting that with savings. We cannot do that repetitively, and so we've got to have some kind of solution. And our goal is that as the economy rebounds, we can see more revenue from the county, and we can see more revenue from the state, and we can have a little bit of a softer landing. So on the EduJobs front, that is where we are. On the discretionary cut, we take an $8.4 million discretionary cut this year from the state. And we've been talking to state legislators about relief on some part, all of that. And I have a conference call this morning with some state legislators, and we continue that discussion. So we're not out of the woods on this by any stretch, but we are having good, solid conversations with public officials that are interested in helping find more money for education systems.
What does it mean if Wake County doesn't get that additional money?
Well, we're not thinking in that direction yet, Chris. We have contingency plans, but right now we're working hard to meet our 8.8 increase in from the county and or the state.
Moving to a non-controversial topic, student assignment.
Okay, all right.
First, just let me get your overall impression of and update about where we are in terms of the new assignment plan.
So we've done round one and round two of what we call the choice selection processes. We also did a magnet selection round back in December. And of all, we've got 150,000 plus students coming into the system or staying in the system for next year, which is about a 3,800 increase as of today. We were expecting a 3,400 increase as of August, mid-August, and so already we're exceeding our expectations, and I'll talk about that in a second. But what we have now is 97% after round two, 97% of parents with students in the school that they want their students in, whether or not that is choosing to stay where they wanted to be or participating in the choice selection round and getting a different school than either where they were or what their feeder pattern was going to send them, or if they're a rising kindergartner or new to the system, they got roughly 8 out of 10 got what they asked for on their first choice if they participate in choice. So when you combine the 92% choosing to stay where they are with the 78% number that we have now for first choice, that's 97% of the 150,000 being where they want to be. That still leaves 4,500 that we know would like to get into a school other than where they're assigned. And so we're working with each of those families, and the process now, transfer appeal process as it is called, is ongoing at this time.
What will be the result when this plan is finished of the number of schools that have a low income population, free and reduced lunch population that's high, and that might be a cause for concern? Where are we in the economic diversity angle?
Sure. Before we started this plan, Chris, we had 60 schools that were 40% of the students over 40% free and reduced lunch students. So we don't expect that to change much, if at all. What we're seeing is that there's been minor fluctuations up or down within schools, but the balance of schools have not tipped significantly in one direction or another. And so right now we're pretty comfortable holding steady at where we were. Where we're really trying to focus is on the enriching the academic opportunities within all schools. And so we added this year 5 new STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math programs. And previous year we added 7 STEM programs and 3 global networking programs, which is a language. And we're trying to extend outside of the magnet area some of the specialized programming so that students, no matter where they live, have access, particularly in a choice program, have access to STEM, technology, language, and so forth. And what we saw with Walnut Creek, and it merits mentioning here that we had about 5 contributing schools during reassignment 18 months ago to Walnut Creek. As those students came from places like Bailiwick or Hilburn Drive or Root, Jeffries Grove, they came to Walnut Creek with a 36% grade level reading. And so as they got into Walnut Creek, a little over 1/3 of the students were at grade level for reading. And where we're going to end up, this is, of course, testing week. Where we're going to end up, we don't know. The formative assessments have shown us that we're seeing growth. But there's an example of how we're trying to focus on serving the children no matter where they are. And so we have the Renaissance programs, 4 of those, with Walnut Creek being a 5th pay-for-performance program. And you've got Brentwood right around the corner here, Creech Road, Barwell Road, and Wilburn. And where they were the 4 schools that were in the 60s, which were our four lowest performing schools. So we'll see how we do with those this year. And of course, we're trying to focus on increasing academic achievement for all students, but in particular in areas where we have a little bit higher poverty.
A couple things in the news lately that I want to ask you about. One is comments by some realtors that the assignment plan makes it more difficult for them to sell homes. I know there was a story of a Johnson County realtor saying he was encouraging people to move to Clayton instead of Eastern Wake County or Southeastern Wake County because of the school certainty. How do you respond to the comments by realtors about the assignment plan?
You know, I've heard both positive and negative comments from realtors. And if we're honest about it, student assignment's been controversial for years in Wake County. So is the realtor's conscience clean when he or she sells a house to someone and a week later that house is reassigned to a different school? Really what we've done is we moved the uncertainty from the back end to the front end. And, you know, we're having honest, hard discussions about it. You know, I pointed out the real estate numbers when a few people were saying that people are walking away from Wake County. Well, the real estate numbers, the data showed exactly the opposite. We gained in market share as a county to the Johnson and other counties relative. Whether or not the assignment plan had anything to do with that, I don't know. I don't think right now that there's a direct correlation between assignment and the market. I think I talk to just about every Friday Fidelity Investment employees that are moving down here, and they're very interested in Wake County public schools and finding a house in Wake County. And once you explain the plan to them, there seems to be pretty good clarity. And we talk right after some realtors. And so I think it's just a matter of change and getting used to it. This is really an adequate public facilities discussion where there is uncertainty. Is where we don't have adequate public facilities. Mills Park Elementary School is a very good example. If you live within 1.5 miles of Mills Park Elementary School, there are so many kindergartners in that area, we don't have enough capacity to hold them all. Under the old node-based plan, that school would be capped, should have been capped several years ago. But today, there's a wait list that far exceeds the number of kindergartners that it can hold, and it's a math problem because you can have only 24 K-1-2-3 students in a classroom, and system-wide we have to be 21 average, and all kindergartner and first graders must be on the first floor. That's law. And so Mills Park Elementary School has 15 classrooms on the first floor, so they've got this year 8 kindergarten classes and 7 first grade classes. What they've had to do is move other populations that are supposed to be on the first floor also into counselor offices and to other spaces, teacher lounges, other unconventional spaces. And we've done that at Cedar Fork and other places. So this is really a growth and planning and adequate public facility discussion. It's not an assignment issue discussion. It's do we have enough space for our children in certain locations? And what we're finding is, no, we don't. And the same thing can be said for downtown Raleigh, where we had a little bit of a spark. And it's because, I had a parent stand up when I was in a church over in Oakwood one evening and say, why are you busing magnet kids in here and blocking me out from going to Conn Elementary right around the corner? And, well, it's a good question. And part of the program and part of the legacy of Raleigh and Wake County is that we have this magnet program. And so we've got to take a look at, are our percentages right? Are the magnet programs in the right places for the right reasons? And so we're doing that review right now.
One final assignment question, and then I got one quick thing before I let you go. Under the node plan, as the first controversy about that was really developing, it was some years of 3,000, some years 4,000, some years 5,000 kids that were being reassigned that caused a lot of the consternation. Now there's 4,500 kids that you mentioned that still aren't quite maybe where they want to be. And people back then said the problem was we weren't handling growth right, and this was a growth issue, not an assignment issue. So I know that the plans are dramatically different, but there seems to be a parallel in the discussion about it's a small percentage of kids whose parents are upset. We need to find the best way to educate them, and that was the case before.
There's a couple fundamental differences. First of all, the numbers, it was on average 7,000 were being reassigned mandatorily, and then you had 5,000 to 7,000 that were asking for transfer appeals. So somewhere between 12 and 14,000 were not happy with their assignment or where they were going or the process. They ultimately, we have great principals and great teachers. When they were asked in January a few years ago if they liked their school, of course they love their school because we have great principals and great teachers who figure it out and make it happen. Now the process of how you got there, that's a whole different question. And so philosophically, to get to your point, the difference is, does the system tell the parents where to go, or do we give the parents more say in the matter? And that's fundamentally, do we let the parents distribute themselves across the system according to available capacity, or does the system say this is where you're going?
Finally, before I let go, one issue before lawmakers and state policymakers this year, including the state board, is the establishment of a virtual online charter school. There's a lot of charter schools already in North Carolina, and there'll be more. But there's a school in Cabarrus County that might be chartered for this fall that would be taking students from all across the state for an online program, including possibly from Wake County. And I wonder what your thoughts are as a professional educator.
Well, you know, Chris, my thoughts are that choice is a good thing, whether it's within a school system or whether it's a parent that wants private school or homeschool or charter school or another kind of public school such as Wake County Public Schools. My job as the Wake County Public School Superintendent is to be the first best option for parents. And so we need to be competitive against charters because they're a reality, and against private schools and against homeschools. And so our goal is to provide the very best education for our students. I can't control what the General Assembly does, and I can't control who our competitors are, but what I can do is make sure that we are providing the best programming, the best enrichment, the best opportunities for our students by picking great principals, having them pick fantastic teachers, providing them the resources they need, the programming that they need, and providing an interesting array of opportunities such as the STEM and 21st century campus we have at Hilburn K-8 as we transform that school, the two leadership academies that had 1,000 applicants for 300 seats. So demand is out there for smaller, more flexible, nimble schools that can address parents' concerns about transitioning from elementary to middle or middle to high school. So we've got to be able to face the realities of education today, and that is parents have a lot of choice. So we've got to be able to compete against those that are competing against us trying to provide different opportunities for students, and we need to provide those opportunities. The world is changing pretty rapidly, and monolithic school systems will kind of die on the vine if we don't become more nimble.
Well, Superintendent Tata, thank you. I know you're busy, and we really appreciate you being with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris.
Up next, a school voucher scheme for North Carolina. Stay with us.